Hello, you're listening to Lifeguard IT, a podcast about diving into the deep end of enterprise IT. Brought to you by Lakeside Software.
An industry leader in workspace analytics, Lakeside Software has been helping organizations improve their end-user experience for over 20 years. Our unique method of endpoint data collection helps enable business productivity by providing you with key insights into your users, the business processes that encompass their jobs, and the technologies they use to get work done. From continuously monitoring your end users' experiences to planning for your next transformation project, Lakeside's analytics suite helps you optimize your environment every step of the way.
To learn more, visit www.lakesidesoftware.com. This is your host, Heather Bicknell. I'm joined today by my co-host, Linda Sell, as well as Director of Applied Engineering at Lakeside Software, Ben Murphy. Today, we're going to be talking to you about the recent malware threats that have come to everyone's attention, known as Meltdown and Spectre. We're going to talk about what we know about them so far, what we've seen about their impact, and what IT can do to protect to address potential vulnerabilities. Ben is on specifically to talk about some research that he's done into how CPU utilization has changed so far since the Microsoft patch. But first, for anyone who's not up to speed on this conversation, we're just going to briefly explain from a high level what these attacks are and why they're so important. Yeah, so Linda, do you want to take it away and talk to us about Meltdown?
Yeah, so in a more detailed level, it's basically taking advantage of Intel and Apple processors with the Intel privilege escalation. So what that means is that it's leaking data stored in the kernel memory from regular user programs, basically giving people access to cache data. So what does that mean in English is that it's basically giving people access to very sensitive information that may be stored on your laptop.
Yeah, and that can include things like passwords, your emails, crypto keys, like definitely information you don't want people getting any access to.
Exactly. And as far as Spectre goes, it plays more in the space of manipulating the processor code. In specifics, more like when it branches, hence the ghost with the branch, very threatening, to gain access to sensitive information. So it's in the same vein of releasing information that you wouldn't typically want released, basically.
Yeah, and both of these vulnerabilities are due to how specific to how most modern processors work, in that they execute something known as speculative execution, and that's the vulnerability that both attacks would take advantage of. The attacks are still theoretical right now, we should mention, and it seems like researchers have been at these companies have been aware of them for a few months and are just starting to, it's just starting to come to broad attention. So why is this a problem? That's what we're going to talk about next. Why should we care? So obviously, it's a scary thing. You don't want people to gain access to your information. These vulnerabilities make it potentially fairly accessible for people to be able to do that on a wide number of systems. Ben's rolling his eyes. Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree with that. I'm just, it's an interesting way of phrasing it. It absolutely makes information that should not be accessible, potentially accessible. It's probably worth noting, too, that it's not just theoretical in that they actually have implemented a couple of test scenarios where you absolutely can get that exploit to happen. Specifically, Meltdown, I know in particular, has been proven, at least without the background script or without the actual execution code that they used in order to create the exploit. It's tough to say exactly how they did it, but that was a part of the vulnerability analysis.
Yeah. They've proven these vulnerabilities, but no one's used it maliciously yet, I guess. That we know of is more what I meant. So I guess we can move on to talking about what you found so far, Ben.
Yeah. So it's worth talking a little bit about the way that these problems would evidence themselves in, well, the mitigation of these problems would evidence themselves in terms of problems in computing. There we go. So the real context of this is that workload dictates a lot of the way a processor actually processes information. So the one caveat that I'll put out there before I even introduce the idea of what the findings are is that your mileage is definitely going to vary significantly. It's going to vary a lot depending on the processor architecture. It's going to vary a lot depending on what the actual applications in question are and what they're doing. And one really important note, and this is something that people have seen a lot of, it's going to vary a lot depending on the I/O throughput that you're seeing as well. So obviously there are a lot of factors that are at play in this. That being said, though, there are some common factors that we can look to. And one of the things we tried to do with our testing was come up with kind of a ubiquitous workload. So I'll introduce the specifics. We've focused on VDI first because that is a very interesting shared CPU case. So the idea here is that in any environment where you have, in the VDI case, multiple operating systems sharing a resource like CPU in this particular case that's hosted by a hypervisor, you have the opportunity for a lot of cumulative problems with executing tasks. So what that means is obviously the more of this mitigation the operating system has to do, the more kind of buffered overhead you're going to end up adding because that fix basically is going to introduce slowdowns for each of the transactions that take place within the processor queue. So what does that mean? It means that generally speaking, even if you only saw a small increase in, let's say, CPU usage on one VM, it's going to become additive very quickly. So that's where we wanted to start there. We will be looking at terminal services /RDSH as well. So Zenapp servers as an example of that soon. But the idea here is, again, we're trying to identify things where we anticipate the maximum impact. So here we go, what you've been waiting for. Definitely you can fast forward to this point. You might want to put that in the notes.
I'll put the timestamp in the show notes.
Yeah, please do, because I'm going to go on for a while. So we've noticed that there's about a 1% increase in CPU load for a very basic workload on VDI. So outlining some parameters, and you can see these in our blog, it's a density of VMs, 62 on a relatively old piece of hardware. We wanted to make sure that we had something that was more representative of what probably a lot of people would have out there. So it uses an Ivy Bridge processor. 6 gigs of RAM per VM, local SSD storage. So we're not on a vSAN or an actual SAN. Again, another factor that might kind of change your perspective. In general, we did not notice a substantial increase in the average CPU usage per VM. So again, it's really about 1.3%, give or take, increase. But the key is that that's per VM. So in the aggregate, that starts to become very significant. And that's where you start to see things like processor queuing and actual CPU ready time happening on kind of the hypervisor level, so on a per host basis, which then evidences itself in the VM as processor queuing that's evident in the VM operating system or the guest operating system and other kind of slower processing details.
Yeah, and I think we should know also that the systems we were looking at were running Windows 10.
Yes.
And Microsoft has already said that they expect that Windows 7 and 8 users will definitely be noticing some slowdowns, and any PC with a processor older than 2015 will likely also definitely notice that system performance decrease.
Yeah, so it's worth noting, too, that this Ivy Bridge is a 2013 era processor. So our understanding is that it should be hit relatively hard in comparison to like Skylake, which is 2015 right. And above. But I have not, at least in our kind of IO light workloads, seen that that's the case, at least not yet.
And you mentioned that you ran a light workload on that. So you would define that as more like Outlook and maybe like word processor kind of stuff like that.
Yep, exactly. So kind of a browser as kind of the primary work engine, and then Outlook, Word, and Excel, just kind of reading content. So not very IO intensive, which again is kind of one of those predictors. There are some other factors that play into this as well. In fact, we developed some content around when do we anticipate that you're going to run into CPU problems based on the way that applications perform on the system and what users are actually up to. Again, you can check the blog for more explicit details about that, because right now Heather's giving me the shut up bias, I think is what I would call that.
Not at all. We could talk about Meltdown Inspector all day long.
Okay. So to pick things back up from the top,
All right. Well, I think everyone's probably wondering at this point, how are they going to assess this in their own environment, and what steps can they take to sort of, you know, mitigate any CPU load and then also obviously guard against any attack? I think the most obvious one is just to know what you've got in your environment. You know, these patches have been coming out at a pretty steady pace. Are your users patched?
Yep, I think that's an excellent point.
There's also the point of hardware. So Ben mentioned earlier, or Heather, actually, how old your processors are. And, like, that can easily affect how easily you can be patched or maybe not patched.
Yeah, in terms of shared CPUs, how many systems are sharing CPUs in your environment and what could that load potentially look like? Yeah, and then probably the next step from there is just to look for any performance impact before and after patches, like the research that Ben has done in your own environment to see, did it make a difference, and are your users being impacted, and do you need to take some steps there? In the case of VDI, that may mean that you need to reduce density, unfortunately.
And the final step would probably be to continuously monitor usage and performance. So to be able to identify any abnormalities and changes in our resource demands.
Yeah, and that would help you see any funny business happening in your environment and help you identify the presence of malware, not just for these attacks, but, you know, for any cybersecurity threat that is sure to pop up in 2018.
What a year.
Let me be the first to say this is the best podcast you guys have recorded all year.
Well, thanks, Ben.
I appreciate the compliment. So good news is that patches are steadily rolling out, and the attacks are still theoretical.
Very good. There is some bad news, though, which is that there is a lot of uncertainty on the horizon. So the issue, especially with the Spectre patch, is that there's a lot of unknowns with the actual implementation because there are multiple stacks that are involved here. So for Meltdown, you had an OS level patch or a kernel patch that might be applied to Linux, Windows, etc. And then you've got a hypervisor level patch because you could do this via software strictly. Now, with Spectre, there's more likely to be some firmware level work that actually has to get done. More importantly, it's probably up in the air how the implementation of that fix is actually going to impact most workloads. So the issue with kind of speculative execution, and especially the changes in the way that branching pathway might work, I think the impacts of that have yet to be seen. So I think we're going to have to keep our eyes open on that one. Definitely going to depend a lot on the workload. Absolutely, for sure on that.
All right. Well, that's what we know so far about Meltdown and Spectre. We'll have more information upcoming on our blog, which you can read at lakesidesoftware.com/blog. As always, you can contact us at lifeguardit@lakesidesoftware.com. We're also on Twitter @lakesidesoft. Just want to say a quick thank you to Ben for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you guys for having me. That's always nice to join you. Also, you can hit me on Twitter @TheBenMurphy.
If you like to subscribe, you can find us on your favorite podcast platform. It'd be so wonderful if you could rate or review. That would really help us get some more eyes on it. Thanks for listening.